Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the Guy James Show on this kind of cool Southwest Florida day. And as I hear, kind of really cool up north today. So hope you folks are all able to keep warm. No matter where you are, I know it's nice out west right now in the Phoenix area. Talked to my brother. He said it's about 80 degrees out there today. A little cooler than that here today, but my word, we're hearing about some nasty, nasty weather up north. And I hope, avoid the frostbite and all that. We do hope you'll give us a call today. Join in on the program, 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. Again, that's 866-546-5254. And if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, you can call us toll-free at 202-370-6153. And Phoenix, 623-444-5252. Love to hear from you. After all, this is a talk show. That doesn't mean I do all the talking. A lot to talk about today. We're going to have Vic Camber, noted Democratic strategist, with us, around the bottom of the hour, I think it's going to be. Always look forward to having Vic on the program. He's, he lives in D.C., knows what's going on, and I always appreciate his insight. So I look forward to talking to him in just a little while. My, an eventful day yesterday, wouldn't you say? Very eventful day, and lots of things that going on in the House of Congress, houses of Congress that we'll talk about today. Taking a look at my notes here, some things that I did want to mention today. There are just lots of things going on around the country. I see Ted Haggard he's completed his therapy for his sexual addiction. That's Reverend Ted Haggard on Colorado Springs. Says he's not a homosexual. He's going to move away from Colorado Springs, and he and his wife are going to try and get their master's degree in psychology. And they're not ruling out the possibility that he could one day be a minister of the gospel again. Well, isn't that good news? Kind of makes you all warm and fuzzy, doesn't it? Let's see now. The evangelicals have forgiven Jimmy Swaggart. He's back in the biz again. Jim Baker. He's back in the biz again. And Ted Haggard. He's not quite back in the biz again, but you can expect him to be somewhere down along the road. And he'll have his master's in psychology then. Seems to me the only guy these evangelicals haven't forgiven for having his equipment in the wrong place is Bill Clinton. And they just can't seem to forgive old Bill. I don't know. Kind of an odd situation there, don't you think? I think that is very, very funny. What else are we going to... And one thing of note, I'm not going to talk a lot about it today, because really waiting to see have a bombshell drop here in the next day or two. Is Fitzgerald going after Cheney, do you suppose? Do you think Fitz is trying to find a way to get at Cheney? I think he might be. He's certainly nipping around the edges of the whole thing. Can he go after Cheney? That's the thing. Do they have to impeach him first and then try him for criminal? I don't know. I think so. I think you have to. I don't think you can. I don't think you can charge a sitting president or vice president with a felony. I think you have to wait until he gets out of office first. So let's throw him out, and then let's charge him with that. Hey, how do you feel about what went on in the Senate yesterday? I'd like to know how you feel. You can call and share your opinions with me. But we may feel the same. I don't know. Would somebody let me know if there's ever been a time in American history as shameful compared to what happened yesterday in the United States Senate? Here we have 100 senators, and maybe except for Russ Feingold, maybe, not one among them with the guts to do something meaningful about this awful Bush war that we're mired in right now. Nobody other than Russ Feingold. And, of course, the most gutless of all are Warner from Virginia and Hagel from Nebraska. Both of them have spent the last couple of weeks attacking the administration's crazy plan to put more troops in Iraq, the surge. And both have been very vocal about their opposition to it. And yet, when it came to a vote yesterday, both of them voted against the bill. Warner voted against his own bill. And except for the outright bootlicking hawks among them, like Kyle and McConnell and Lieberman, yes, Lieberman is really a Republican, they went right along with Junior Bush and Cheney once again. Over 70% of the American public thinks this war is going badly. Our own troops think this mission is failing and that we ought to get out. And still, the United States Senate is afraid to oppose the White House. Afraid to oppose him on one of the worst foreign policy blunders in American history. The voters know that this is a horrible blunder, and it should never have been started in the first place, but does the Senate give a damn what the voters think? No. Hell no. They took their marching orders from the White House yesterday, and they defeated a chance to debate the issue in front of the public. Not to end the war, mind you, but just to debate it. They're afraid of a public debate on this issue, and who can blame them? A public debate won't do anything but further point out the awful, deceitful decisions that put us in Iraq in the first place. And it would probably expose our Congress as a bunch of people, with a few exceptions, a bunch of people who were willing to give this Bush monster a free hand to do what he wanted to do militarily. Something he and his people had planned for a long time before 9/11. We've got testimony to that effect. We all know that Bush had planned his war long before 9/11, but no matter, let's just vote to let him do what he wants with the lives of our military personnel. The Iraq War Resolution, we all know by now, was a disaster for our country. Many of us predicted it. Not with personal opinion, but with evidence that it would fail and lead to further turmoil in the Middle East. And that's exactly what has happened. And so now the gambler-in-chief wants to throw the dice and bet double or nothing. He's gambled away $500 billion of our money. He's gambled away the lives of over 3,100 of our Army, Navy, Marine, and Air Force personnel, and he's willing to gamble that many more to try and salvage something for his legacy, to salvage anything from this, what else can you call it but a horror in the Middle East. Bush is a fool. Many of us knew that from the beginning. We warned, we yelled, we protested, we did all we could do to expose him and his motives for getting us involved in this war of his. And we were accused of being anti-American, treasonous, seditionist. And now, who is right? Who has been right all along? Are the people who were right about this allowed to be involved in the decision-making from here on out? Hell no. Let's have the fools who planned it and prosecuted the war, let's have them be allowed to plan some more disasters for the United States military. To say nothing of our foreign policy reputation around the world. Our treasury's bankrupt. Our military's been decimated. Our world reputation is gone, and still, these Republican bastards are allowed to continue on with their misguided policies. And after watching that deal yesterday, I don't think the Democrats are a whole lot better. They squawk and talk for months about how wrong this whole thing is. They go on TV and bash Bush and his war policy. Just think of all the times you've seen Joe Biden and Levin and Schumer and Dorgan and Boxer and Feinstein and so many others on TV deploring Bush's prosecution of this war. And yet when the opportunity comes for them to do something about it, like defund this war, what do? They shut up and try and pass a non-binding resolution against the surge. Except for Russ Feingold. Where were the Democrats yesterday? Harry Reid gets up and gives this candy-ass speech, and many of them went on the tube to beat on the Republicans, when in fact the Democrats are possibly even more gutless than the Republicans. At least most of the Republicans are voting according to what they've said publicly. The Democrats, on the other hand, have been out there in the media moaning and complaining, but when a chance comes up to put up or shut up, they take the coward's way out, and I'm damned ashamed of them for that. I don't think I've ever felt worse about my party than I do today. I was so elated when we took back the Congress. Well, as it turns out, it didn't matter at all, not in the Senate side. The Republicans are still running the show. What the voters told the Senate by electing so many new Democrats is that we want out of this war. But what do we get? Politics. Cowardly chicken crap politics. United States senators without the cojones to take a stand and fight for it. Oh, if we cut, you know, if we vote to cut off the funds, the Republicans will say bad things about us. They'll be all mean and everything. They'll convince the voters that I'm not a good American and I might not get reelected. And that mean old Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Fox News, they'll all go after me and, oh, my life will be tough. You know, there are exceptions, and for them I'm grateful, but for the rest, I'm deeply ashamed, and I'm disappointed that they don't have the resolve to do the right thing because of being afraid of this immoral, misguided, evil White House. God, I was mad when that was over with yesterday. What they could have done, and what they did do, a million miles apart, and Republicans still running the show. Still running it. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
Well, I was really frustrated with what went on yesterday, too. But, you know, even before the bill got to the floor, I think it was ridiculous. Because this was yet another one of those toothless bills. Oh, let's just say we aren't happy with the situation, but not have a timetable. Let's make it non-binding. So the fact that Harry Reid put that up to start with was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. It was.
You know, we had Chris Dodd here, and I think Russ Feingold and a few others who said they weren't going to support it for that very reason. But, you know, they keep playing these little games like, oh, yeah, we're gonna do something, you know, to show that we care, and you know, and nothing's getting done. And, you know, excuse me, the only silver lining to this is now we can go back to those losers, Snow and Norm Coleman and Sununu, and go back to their states as they're waiting for re-election and say, hey, look, you know, this person, you know, refused to debate on the war and is, you know, obstructing to keep the war going. So that might be the only silver lining here.
Well, you're right. I'm in one of those moods today that I'm thinking, well, even if we do defeat him and get more Democrats in, we get a bunch more people with no cojones in office. I'm in one of those moods today.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're entirely right, you know, and you know, I read an interesting point that said, you know, when we were in the minority, we were in constant fear of what the Republicans were going to do and this and that. Now the tables are turned. The Republicans are in the minority, and they still seem to be controlling the show. I mean, I don't know what the deal is.
You're right, and the one other point is, are we are we in the majority?
Yeah.
You have to wonder with Lieberman and Johnson not being able to vote, we're at a disadvantage.
Well, and, you know, and going into this next election cycle, I mean, we're, you know, we're in trouble, too, because, you know, we got some easier things like Sununu, maybe, and Norm Coleman. But on the other hand, people like Mary Landrieu, despite the fact she voted with Bush 85% of the time, is pretty much dead meat. I don't see how she's going to make it through this, you know.
No, she won't. She won't. Know, she didn't even vote yesterday.
Yeah, you know, and I think she's damned if she doesn't, damned if she doesn't, which is, it's sort of why we've always said all along, you know, people like the Nelson twins and this and that, you know, why do they vote with Bush half the time? Because when it comes time for the election, they fight with him anyway. I mean, they do anything they can to get him out. You think they're going to say, oh, that nice Mary Landrieu, you know, she voted with Bush a lot of the time? No, they're going to say, you know, she was halfway responsible for Katrina and this and that, you know. It makes no sense.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right on that one.
But getting back to this legislation, what they should do, what Harry Reid should do, is bring up a new bill every single day to the Senate floor about Iraq and let the Republicans obstruct every day, you know?
I think they probably will. You know, but you know, going back to, like, John Warner and Hagel, I was shocked, well, not by yesterday afternoon, I wasn't, but when I heard that they were going to start voting against, you know, this proposal yesterday, and basically the message from the Bush administration seems to be, well, you know, thanks a lot, guys, for carrying our water on this war for 4 years, but now we're going to accuse you of helping the terrorist. And that's what they're afraid of, and that's what the White House message was. Well, you know, Snow said it. Well, you know, it might be empowering bin Laden or something, to the words to those effect.
Yeah, well, you got to remember that with what we got, like 7-8 players in this who are running for president, so we're going to have a whole lot of theatrics on both sides. We're going to have people like Hagel who get up and say, well, see, I'm not really Bush's whore. I have my own ideas, but, you know, when push comes to shove, they vote with Bush anyway. And then you'll have people like Hillary and Obama and all those people say, well, we maybe should think about possibly getting out at some point, but I don't want to set any timetables or anything like that, you know.
Right.
So we're going to have a lot of presidential theatrics in the next few months, which I think is not going to help the situation at all.
I agree. Well, it's going to be interesting to see if the Senate ends up doing anything. I don't have a lot of faith in them right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, thanks for your call. Let's go over here to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Mike from San Jose. How you doing?
Hi.
Well, you said the L word a few minutes ago, and I wanted to expand on that. I guess you've seen this story this morning where Lieberman is saying that we need to have a war on terror attacks, right?
Right.
And, I mean, it just gets so ridiculous that I don't even know where to begin with what's been going on lately. And, you know, I'm ashamed of the Democratic Party, and I'm ashamed of the way this recent thing was handled, and I'm ashamed of the whole Tiger Beat pop star thing with Obama and Hillary, and I'm ashamed of Hillary backpedaling on her war stance. You know, I mean, she and Joe should just do lunch, and they could talk about how they can keep the war going, you know, because that's really what they both want, I think. But she wants to be president more than she wants to stand on her convictions.
You're exactly right. You know, we need people right now who are not politicians, but leaders. We need leaders, you know, unlike the people presently in the Senate, we need leaders with some courage. We need leaders who are more concerned with leading than with polling well. And we need people who, when asked a question, well, speak plainly and give real answers instead of making speeches and spouting slogans like they do. I get so sick of seeing them we got a lot of static here. I get so sick of seeing them on the talk programs, and all they ever do is say what they never answer a question.
Well, you know, the thing that bothers me the most, I think, is that despite the fact that the Republicans had their backsides handed to them in the November election, if you recall within the last couple months, specifically when Mitch McConnell stepped up to the plate, he basically said, I mean, not to mince words, he basically said, make no mistake about it, Democrats, I will make you my bitch. And yesterday he held true to that promise.
He sure did.
And the thing is, I think back of, you know, my days on Democratic Underground, and I won't replay all those steps, but I mean, the thing that dismayed me over there is that there really is a thing where you're kind of allowed to discuss certain things and not allowed to discuss others. You know, I think back when the Fitzmas that never happened was going on, and Will Pitt came out with this exclusive, earth-shattering story about how Karl Rove was going to be indicted, and he couldn't tell you where the story came from, but it was as sure as the sun goes up in the east and sets in the west.
Oh, the Jason Leopold story on Truth Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all this kind of stuff. I mean, instead of being a real force for change, if you say the wrong thing to the wrong person, they take the marbles and send you home and tombstone you. And, I mean, you know, some people deserve it. Maybe I deserved it for what I said on your show. I got a little out of hand that day, and maybe I got exactly what I deserved. But we're a party where our sensitivities and the things we can't say and we shouldn't say or whatever, you really have to look at Mitch McConnell. He's a withered old fart who basically stood his ground and said, I don't care if we're the minority or not. You're not getting squat done as long as I'm standing here.
Yeah.
And no one's proved him wrong yet, guy. And so what does that say about 2008?
You're right. You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. Hey,
yep.
Thanks for your call. Good to hear
from
you.
Have a good one. Bye.
Let's head on over here to line two. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Phil up in Daytona
Beach. Hi, Phil. Are you all rested up from your trip?
Yes, thanks. I got my voice back, too.
Attaboy.
I don't know if you guys on the other end are happy about that or not, but it was good to hear Craig earlier on. I think the senators, well, all of them in the Beltway bubble there, underestimate the American people, you know, and...
You know, you're right, Phil. I think they're dealing with a different breed of cat than they were only a decade ago. Now we're informed. Now the masses here, we got this good old internet, and people can be, should be, people are better informed than they were. They're not dealing with a bunch of people that only know what they read in the newspapers anymore.
Yeah, and people are realizing that it's all bullshit, too, and they're tuning out, man.
Oh, yeah.
They are turning their TVs off, and they aren't reading, you know, you got these newspapers that basically not only failed us by not giving us the truth for Iraq. Iraq could have been prevented, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Iraq, if the newspapers actually printed what they knew at the time, we would not have one soldier killed.
Oh, you're right. And what's her name at the, was it at the Washington Post? She was being used by the Bush administration to push the war.
Judith Miller up
yeah.
at the Times.
The Times.
Too.
The Times.
Paper of record, my rear end, you know. It's not worth wiping my rear end, I'll tell you now, because, you know, they lost my trust.
Exactly.
And I'm working on a piece right now, and I'm entitling it When the Truth Levies Break.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm around here in Daytona Beach, you would not believe how ahead of the curve the kids are, you know, with this MySpace and the Internet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, these kids are so far ahead, you know, and this... I really see the corporate media and the politicians all getting knocked on their asses, you know, when the truth levies do break, and they have really underestimated the American people. The problem is right now, I mean, they are still up there in the Senate and in the Congress, determining whether or not this war will continue, and you know, the people are missing in action, you know, but more and more are coming into the, you know, answering the call, realizing that they have to participate in our what happens in our name, but when we do hit that critical mass, and hopefully it's sooner than later, these truth levies are going to break, and I can't wait for the day, Guy.
Well, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great to be able to trust everything our politicians said and know that they were going to do their duty the way it should be done every day? My God, what a different country this would be. Phil, thanks so much for calling today.
Thank you, guys.
Good to hear
great
from
show. You.
You
too.
It just, isn't it frustrating? After that vote last night, it was raining here, and You know, I went outside and just stood there for a little bit. What's the point of it all? What is the point of it all? And I don't want to talk a little later in the program about what one of the reasons is for all this, about how the American public has got hornswoggled into thinking that politicians are something that they're not, that they're something special and we're not, and that the conservatives in power, the PNAC group and all that, are these know-all, be-all, end-all people that, you know, they know it all and we don't. And we want to talk about that a little later in the program today. We're going to take a quick break, and hopefully when we come back, we'll have our guest Vic Camber with us. Vic, always a great guest, so stay tuned for that. Be back in just a couple minutes.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days, so surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me, and brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon on another eventful day, the day after the big vote in the Senate last evening. And we'll be looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it a little later. 866-546-5254. That's the number where you can call. 866-546-5254. And right now, as promised, we've got, one of my very favorite politicos, I call them, in Washington. I like to always hear Vic Camber. Vic, are you with us?
I am, and I appreciate that term.
Well, what show did I see you on again here recently? You're always popping up somewhere. Was it on with Matthews?
I was on Tucker.
Probably. Oh, okay, Tucker, yeah, yeah. I try and catch, those are on twice a day here, and I try and catch one of them, or at least part of them every day, and I saw you on there. What do you call yourself exactly, Vic?
A big mouth. I don't know. A political consultant, a labor consultant, but I guess I'm willing to stand up and fight, and they like somebody who'll throw a little food fight, so I get fortunate enough to get called every now and then.
Well, that's what I like about you. You don't back down from those people like a lot of them do. As you know, we had a very eventful vote last evening in the Senate, and I know...
discouraging.
Very, very discouraging, and I'm discouraged about it from two fronts, but... Vic, with your expertise, can you explain to our audience just what went on in that chamber last evening? I mean, can you explain just why in the world, most notably, Chuck Hagel and John Warner voted to, you know, the opposite of what they've been saying these past couple of weeks?
They'll tell you that it was a strategic vote. They want more debate and more discussion before they have a vote. They were afraid of what would come out if they had allowed the filibuster to have been broken, but none of it made sense. I mean, it does not make sense what they're saying. I don't know how much pressure party-wise was put on both of them to hold tight. It doesn't make sense. I mean, Mr. Reed has said he's willing to have a full debate. He's willing to let people talk as long as they want to talk, but he wants to get to a vote. These guys stopped the vote.
Warner, I just don't get it. Surely the White House could not hold sway over him on anything. I don't see how they could put any political pressure on a guy like John Warner.
Just on without knowing what took place, a simple phone call from the president could have just done a personal thing. I mean, there is still this personal issue, and I'm expecting, I mean, the normal, there's a normal way of operating on filibusters. There's a number of senators up there, and I haven't tracked Mr. Warner's votes, that will support filibusters for up to 3 votes, just on principle. And they've done that historically, regardless of what the issue is. And you would think that a war like this and deaths that are taking place would transcend some tradition of that they've had. But there are some senators up there that just automatically will give 3 votes on filibusters on the 4th vote that they break away. And so I don't know if that's what takes. I mean, what I'm saying to you, really, Guy, is there's no explanation that makes any sense.
Nothing reasonable. You brought that up about maybe you got a call from the White House. Isn't there an air of what I call phoniness in the Senate chamber when they address each other as my distinguished colleague and my good friend, when one of them standing there accusing the other of aiding the enemy by voting for the Levin Warner bill? Doesn't this just add to the public perception that these guys are nothing but a bunch of self-serving blowhards?
I think you're being very direct and correct. I mean, it is, I guess living here in town, better they do that than what they really would like to call each other on the floor of the Senate for decorum's sake. But, you'd think that some of that is just, it is phony. I mean, my good friend, the distinguished gentleman or distinguished chair lady from this place or that place, when they really can't stand to be in the same room with some of those people of the same party. And we're not even talking about 2 different parties in some cases. That is the decorum of the Senate and the House, supposedly. And you can get censured by your colleagues if you break that decorum.
Well, good thing I'm not in the Senate. I'd had a hard time holding my tongue yesterday if I were Warner, and I can't remember who it was now, Kyle or one of them saying, you know, about aiding Al-Qaeda if you voted for this thing. My God. And then the guys, you wouldn't, and what I'm saying is, I guess you couldn't be my friend if you thought that of me.
I think you're right. I mean, that's what doesn't make any sense here is some of the thinking, some of the logic, or the lack of logic that took place yesterday. I mean, I guess I understand if you're an ardent Republican and you're trying to support the president's position, regardless of the reality, you're going to do certain things. But I think the sentiment of this country, the mood in the country, clearly the mood up on the Hill has been that the direction the president's taking us is wrong, and you would think that these people now would really do the right thing, and yet they seem afraid to take action right now.
Well, I'm very discouraged. I know you don't like the way the Republicans behaved yesterday, neither do I, but I'm pretty unhappy with the way the Democrats are behaving right now. I heard loud and clear what the voters said last November. And by the way, I was in Washington, a couple of weeks ago, and we met with a lot of the senators on the day of the State of the Union meet there at the Capitol building and all. And it's very disconcerting to me that they've talked a good game. We had the election. They've heard what the American people said. And yet I don't hear anybody saying they're willing to defund this war.
I think, well, you're right. There's a fear of that it's the wrong. There is right now. No one really has an answer, and a simple answer is to defund the war, pull the troops back, acknowledge that we haven't succeeded. That's a very simple, but no one wants to admit failure. No one wants to acknowledge that we can't win in a third world country, stabilize a third world country. But that's a reality.
It is, but politically, Vic, if you can't do battle with a 28% president, when will you ever be able to?
I think it's not just the 28% president. I mean, I think there's a number of people. Give them some respect to their own beliefs. There are some up there that really believe it would be wrong to defund it, that we're going to hurt the troops that are there. There are some that just believe that. You and I are having a conversation, and I'm trying to put logic to something that's illogical. I mean, I'm saying 4 years later, we've lost, and there's no win here. We're not going to bring democracy to Iraq. It's not going to happen in the way we think of democracy. We're not going to stop this sectarian violence. I don't care how many troops we put there. And if we stop it, it's only for the time the troops are there. And the minute they're gone, the sectarian violence will begin and erupt again. I mean, it's common sense.
Well,
so this is a lose-lose situation for the United States.
It sure is. And I think it came to the hard realization yesterday as well. A lot of people, with Senator Johnson out of action right now, and with Joe Lieberman being pretty much on the other side a lot of the time, do we really, in fact, I mean, we, the Democrats, do we really have a majority in the Senate?
Well, we only in that you've got to figure that in the end, Chuck Hagel, Olympia Snow, Sue Collins will vote the right way on this when all is said and done. This is a very splitting issue, and you know, with the majority, we have a majority of one, and that majority is on this issue is not even one, as you've just said.
It's a tough situation. And yesterday we had more news. We had the new budget come out, and I know you were anxious to talk about that. Here we are again. Let's make the tax cuts permanent, and you poor suckers that need Medicare and Medicaid, you can just go fish. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't get it. It's a president that has no regard for the American people. It's one of the biggest spending presidents in the history. It is the biggest spending president in the history of our country, and yet he spends it on the wrong priorities. I get so angry over just this minimum wage, which wasn't the president's budget, but the minimum wage bill that the Senate tacked on these tax cuts and so forth. Why they won't just vote a straight up and down bill, and if they want to put the tax cuts out there, vote that up straight and down. Let the American public see where you stand on issues. The president wants to cut Medicare, wants to cut Medicaid. Now all of a sudden he wants to be a thrift president, yet he wants another $100 billion for Iraq.
Yeah, and I was at a conference in D.C. recently on health care. And the Families USA conference, and they were absolutely sure that the CHIPS program for the kids, you know, was going to get children's health care was going to get good funding and all, and that came up way short in the vote yesterday.
Right.
Really hard to see how you can get that one past the public, and I don't know. I saw Kent Conrad, who seems to me to always be the leading Democrat on financial matters. wasn't too pleased with this new budget. But
well, I don't think any, I mean, I frankly think even Republicans weren't pleased with it, but they won't say it that many. The budget doesn't answer the problems that we have. Healthcare has, while we've known it's been an issue since Hillary Clinton's days or before, when, you know, in the White House, it's this year has taken on a new life. There really looked like there'd be some kind of action dealing with it. We're up to about 47 million Americans that have no health coverage. We need to start dealing with this problem in this country. Some states have started: Vermont, Massachusetts, Maine. I guess it's up in Illinois and New Mexico. They're talking about it, and much like the Canadian in Canada, they passed the universal health care province by province until the federal government there ultimately had to adopt it, and maybe that's the way to go here. But we need a program, and I like you, thought for sure children's services, whether it be universal care for children or something, would see the light of day. Who could fight that? And yet there is no recognition that, again, it's Iraq is eating us apart. Iraq is taking the money that could be used for so many things in this country.
Yeah. The list of things that could be funded without this war in Iraq are amazing. And, you know, the healthcare issue, it seems to me a good analogy be like it's a huge meteor heading toward the Earth, and we know it's coming. We know it's going to hit. We know damn well it's going to hit, and yet we're able to say, well, you know, it's not here right now, so, you know, we got some time. Let's think about it. And it's going to be devastating when it hits with a full force.
You're absolutely correct, and I wish, see, the difference with what you're even saying, Guy, I wish somebody was really thinking about it. I'd even give them the benefit of the doubt if I thought there was a group of people sitting down and honestly contemplating what do we do, and we're you know, I don't believe that. I think they're just putting their heads in the sand. Ostriches, they're going to, you know, Bush will be out of power in 2 years, out of office. It's not my problem then. I'll be done with it, and let the next guy worry about it.
Vic, we got a couple of minutes left. I want to switch gears and take a look at the well, this early race that we've got going on for president. How do you think it's shaping up on the Democratic side so far?
Well, I still think the three big ones are right now are Hillary, Barack Obama, and John Edwards. I think the others have not really gained much traction yet, but it's so soon. I mean, we're talking about 2 weeks later. When the announcements took place, I think the first quarter, we're going to look at money as who's raised what. If anything, and I think it's just, again, too soon to be critical, but from his announcement, Barack Obama has seemed to quiet down. You haven't heard much. He gave a terrific speech at the Democratic committee meeting the other day, but still he hasn't, you haven't heard much from him. Hillary seems to be moving out and has made some inroads, and John Edwards seems to have made some inroads. But I think that those are the three that we're going to be looking at for the next couple of months until, if one of them makes a major guffaw or mistake, clearly that'll be the major news. Or if nothing more happens, then it'll be money, endorsements, those kinds of things that we're going to be looking at least till about June.
And, you know, one only has to look back to old Jimmy Carter, maybe even Bill Clinton, looking back at dark horses that might come out of the weeds. But the thing is, right now, it seems in this day and age, the money factor is much bigger than it was then. The early run you got to put on to – I read somewhere how much they got to raise every day, and it was just an incredible amount of money.
Right. No, and you said it correctly on both sides. It is the money factor. But the first two state primaries are retail politics, and that's in New Hampshire and in Iowa. And that's where Jimmy Carter did come out in New Hampshire. That's where Bill Clinton was his comeback kid. Even though he didn't win, he did well enough that I think one of these dark horses on either side could emerge potentially, at least as a threat, if they can do well and surprise the front runners there. I mean, all three, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards, all three can't win Iowa. All three can't win New Hampshire. One can win. A second can come close. A third is going to be hurt in that process, and if a third happens to be a Joe Biden or a Tom Vilsack or Bill Richardson, all of a sudden they could have some cachet. The difference is that immediately following these early two or three primaries,
all these states have moved up, and we're going to have a Super Tuesday where money is everything, because it's going to be California, Illinois, Florida, among other states, where it is going to be the television advertisements, the ground troops that money brings you, that are going to make a lot of difference. And whoever's in the front, either with a big momentum or big money, is going to be the winner on Super Tuesday.
Well, one name I still keep hearing out in the hinterlands here, and you didn't mention it, and probably for good reason, but do you think, you've got to hear rumors of whether or not Al Gore is going to jump in?
I do hear, but again, what I really hear is that Al Gore would love the nomination, would love to be president, but he doesn't want to jump in and fight the battle at this point. He is, if anything, he's doing what, frankly, Newt Gingrich is doing, which is, I think, looking at the land, seeing what's happening. And I think if by June or July nobody has really emerged as a lock on the nomination, he may reconsider. But if I were betting today, he doesn't get in.
Well, if there's a chance in hell that Newt Gingrich can become the front runner for the Republicans and win the presidency of the United States, I'm going to start looking at other options. Oh,
well,
man.
You and me both. What Gingrich has said is that he's going to wait till Labor Day, and if the three front runners for the Republican nomination, McCain, Romney, and Giuliani, if no one has caught on, if there's still a three-way fight, and it looks like, you know, they're all in the 20s and 30s, that's how he's going to get in the race. When he's assuming by Labor Day someone will have emerged as the clear front runner, and there's not going to be any room for him. And that's what I guess I'm saying, the same with Gore. If there's no one who's caught fire, I think Gore would consider it, but I think both of them believe that someone will have caught on and be a dominant figure going into the first primaries.
Vic, thanks so much for being with us today. I always enjoy hearing your opinions on everything.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, Vic Camber.
Thank you.
I guess what Vic, if Vic doesn't know what's going on inside the Beltway, nobody does. He's got his ear to the ground pretty doggone well there. We're going to pause for a quick break and be right back.
Peter said to Paul, you know all those words we wrote are just the rules of the game, and the rules are the first to go. But now talking to God is Laurel begging Hardy for a gun. I got a girl in the war, man, I wonder what it is we've done. Said to Petey, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. I got a girl in the war, Paul, the only thing I know to do. Turn up the music and pray that she makes it. The keys to the kingdom got locked inside the kingdom, and the angels fly around in there, but we can't see them. I got a girl in the war, Paul, I know that they can hear me yell. If they can't find a way to hell, or they can go to hell. They can't find a way to help, or they can go to hell.
the pity, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. But I got a girl in the war, all her eyes are like champagne. They sparkle, bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain. They sparkle, bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain. They sparkle, bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain.
The United States of America is the most powerful nation on earth. In itself, this goes a long way to explaining the things it does around the world. At present, it's conducting a war on terror, or more accurately, a campaign against opposition to US domination. Others prefer to call it the beginnings of the Third World War. The United States has an insatiable appetite for conflict. And since going into Korea in the 1950s, it's been at war with someone or other in some corner of the globe non-stop right up to the present day. This drive is now led by the weapons manufacturers themselves. It is a highly dangerous precedent. I call it war corporatism. It's the door of a new fascism being pushed open. And don't be fooled, not all fascism looks like Adolf Hitler. The reality, as we see from the Iraqi invasion, is that the presidency has been captured by the most powerful elements of this corporatism. And this ghastly molecule aims to turn the world into its very own enslaved global market. And the plan is well underway. The attack by Al-Qaeda on the World Trade Center is just one response to it. Is this a conspiracy? Quite the opposite. It is a high-profile project known as the Project for the New American Century. People like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Perle are the major players among politicians, right-wing thinkers, militarists, and industrialists in the creation of the project. The project is a neoconservative manifesto which includes in its toolbox the unbridled use of war in clearing a path for U.S. interests. The will to attack Iraq came entirely from this visible yet sinister group. September the 11th was merely the pretext. Bush is merely the figurehead. And so, who's next, you wonder? Iran? North Korea? France? Britain? None of us really matter to them.
There's a reason...
Okay, we're back here in the Guy James Show. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us today. John Fox coming up after our program today. John's probably getting ready for his program right now. Yes. Down in Australia. Yes, I think John's coming live today anyway. We do want to send our prayers and best wishes out with the Kincaid family. The loss of Bob's father. Don't know exactly what the schedule is for them being back, but I'm sure we'll hear about it very, very soon. We got about 5 minutes until the hour. You have time to give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Yes, indeed. We heard John McCain talking about this mess in Iraq. And McCain said, I do believe that if you really believe that this is doomed, talking about the surge, that if this is doomed to fail and it's going to cost American lives, then you should do what's necessary to prevent it from happening rather than a vote of disapproval, he said, noting that the proposal does not seek to cut off funding. I agree with McCain for once. He's the great flip-flopper, the great prevaricator, but he's right on this. If you really believe, and he threw down the gauntlet to the Democrats, and of course they didn't pick it up either. He said, I do believe that if you really believe that this is doomed to failure and it's going to cost American lives, then you should do what's necessary to prevent it from happening rather than a vote of disapproval. He's absolutely right. I don't often agree with John McCain, but that statement couldn't be more true. If you feel in your heart you need to cut off the funding for this, then do it. Do not be afraid of a 28% president. Do not be afraid of a White House, the Karl Rove and the Dick Cheneys. Do not be afraid of your constituency back home. Do the right thing. It's what politicians should always do. But unfortunately, that's not how it turns out. They do the expedient political thing first. And then worry about what's right. And I'm sorry, but that's the truth with so many of them. Not all, but far too many of them. Far too many of them. When a problem comes up, the first thing that they think of is, oh, gee, will it hurt my political future? That's the first thing that comes in some of their minds. Man, what a shame. Rather than thinking, is this best for my country? Is this best for the people back home? Is this best for the soldiers putting their lives on the line in Iraq and Afghanistan every day? Am I doing the right thing for them? Oh, yes. Down the line, I'll worry about the political aspects of it. But right now, I got to do what's best. Wouldn't it be refreshing? Wouldn't that be refreshing to have a politician feel that way? But like I said, for once, I agree with John McCain on this. And I don't think the Democrats are exactly doing themselves proud on this one. They stand up one by one and give these nice little speeches about, if I had known then what I know now, I would have voted against the Iraq war. Well, hell, how much more do they need to know about, you know, how Bush is trying to lead us into another war right now? And they stand by and say little or nothing. What's wrong with that picture? You know what's wrong with it. Cowardice. Political cowardice. There's a lot of nice people in Congress. A lot of nice senators and House of Representative members. Great people. But they get there and something happens to them. They forget why they're there. And they forget who they're there for. And they forget that they're representing us. Each and every one of those senators voting yesterday had an obligation to every person in the United States to do the right thing. And yet they did not. It's a little bit different with the House of Representatives. They represent their district back home. But the senators, they represent us all. Yes, oh yes, the individual states. But I don't know. I get tired of talking about it sometimes. One would think that somebody would have the guts to stand up on the Senate floor and pound the desk and say, we will defund this war. Somebody who's unafraid, somebody who's in a safe seat, somebody who can wither the storm from the right wing, from the Hannitys and the Rush Limbaughs and the Fox News, somebody that can go through all that and not be adversely affected. It's what we need. Somebody with the courage to do that. Who's it going to be? Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, coming up in about 15 seconds. Please stay with us. We'll be back. We got a great second hour for you today. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Quality News Network. In Pakistan, a suicide bomber blew himself up in a parking lot just outside of Islamabad's international airport. 5 people have been injured. No arrests have been made. This is the latest in the string of bombings in Pakistan and is blamed on Taliban militants fighting security forces on the Afghanistan border. Today in Washington, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates said the U.S. could start bringing troops home later this year. Responding to a question during the Armed Services Committee hearing, Gates said if a plan to quiet Baghdad is successful and the Iraqis accept their responsibilities and assume leadership, the U.S. could begin withdrawing troops later on this year. A member of Iraq's parliament as a convicted terrorist, Jamal Jafar Mohammed, was convicted in 1984 and sentenced to death in Kuwait for the 1983 bombings of the French and U.S. embassies, which killed 5 people. Both U.S. and Iraqi officials are investigating. Mohammed could be stripped of his parliamentary immunity. Iran is blaming the U.S. for the kidnapping of one of its diplomats in Baghdad. Gunmen wearing uniforms similar to that of Iraqi military forces abducted the senior embassy official on Sunday. An Iraqi government official claims the unit is commanded by armed American forces. The U.S. has denied any involvement. Walmart has lost an appeal to keep a class action lawsuit out of the courts. The world's largest private employer is facing sexual discrimination charges and can now face paying billions of dollars to women who earn less than their male counterparts. In Florida, a female astronaut who was arrested Monday will now be charged with attempted murder. Navy Captain Lisa Marie Novak, who flew on Discovery last July, was arrested on Monday for an alleged plot to kidnap romantic rival Colleen Shipman, a NASA engineer. Novak is expected to appear in court on Wednesday for a bond hearing. In Bardstown, Kentucky, a house burned down this morning, killing 10 people, 6 of them children. There are 2 survivors. Investigations into the cause of the fire continue. A British tabloid today printed transcripts of a video recording a U.S. jet fighter pilot after they accidentally fired upon British convoy during the invasion of Iraq. One British soldier was killed in the friendly fire attack. An investigation is underway. In New Orleans, FEMA is demanding the return of $309 million in relief of improperly awarded to 70,000 households following Hurricane Katrina. The federal government has already prosecuted more than 400 people for fraud. $8 million has been returned to FEMA and the American Red Cross. Science and business are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Eastman Kodak Company announced today it will launch its own line of desktop printers with low-cost replacement ink cartridges. The longtime camera maker is attempting to disrupt the industry dominated by Canon and HP, which makes most of its profits from the sale of replacement ink cartridges. 3 amateur archaeologists have found a nest of 100 fossilized dinosaur eggs in an isolated area of central India. The explorers also found footprints of these extinct animals around the single nesting site. A 17-year-old girl has become Egypt's 12th victim of the avian flu. She died yesterday. Egypt has the largest known number of human bird flu infections outside of Asia. A lawsuit against the EPA has been reopened by environmentalists and farm workers. The groups want the government to speed up the ban against a pesticide blamed for injuring the health of workers. AZM is supposed to be phased out by 2012. And Toyota posted an increase in quarterly profits today of more than 7%. The world's second-largest car maker says its quarterly bottom-line profit of $3.6 billion can be credited to hearty sales in Europe and the U.S. Light sweet crude is trading at $58.59 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 5.5%, the NASDAQ is down 4.5%, and the S&P 500 is down 0.4%. There's more news at thequalitynewsnetwork.com. I am Jay Gallet.
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have you with us this afternoon. Be ye here local or all around the country or around the world, we're happy to have each and every one of you with us today. And do appreciate all your emails and messages that you send, and all the folks on the Head On Radio Network chat room and the cards and letters and all that. I do appreciate it very much. I always enjoy hearing from you. You can give us a call at 866-546-5254. And right now, let's go to the phone. We've got Richard in California. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Guy. This is the first time I've called you, and you have piqued my interest with a topic I'm very interested in, and it sounds like you are too, which is how do good politicians go bad?
It's very simple, actually.
All right. What's the solution there?
Well, have you been in any of the House or Senate office buildings?
Oh, not since I was a child.
Okay. One has to walk into the palatial offices of these people and see their staffs and the way they're treated and all the benefits they get and all the adulation they get from the public, and they're literally treated like kings and, well, maybe princes and princesses, and the Senate more so than the House, but even the House members. And one might understand why they would never, ever want to leave that job.
This is understandable. It's very, very clear to me.
Yeah.
And it bumps up against the issue of term limits.
Yes, it does.
In my state.
And you know, they get there, and they got to play ball. You get the majority leader or the whip or somebody comes around and say, hey, we need your vote on this. Well, sorry, Charlie, I'm not voting with you on this. Well, then how would you like to be on the bathroom sink committee instead of the intelligence committee next time around? That's how it goes. And how would you like us to help fund your campaign with our congressional, campaign committee?
I mean, I'm very well aware of how Newt Gingrich had a stranglehold on his fellow congresspeople.
Money,
yeah. He held the slush fund, didn't he?
Sure did.
And he was really in control, what was it, from 1994?
Yeah, I think it was 94.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at it at a different level, you know, not the national government, but I'm looking at it in terms of my state government.
Mm-hmm.
And even counties. The guy who appointed me as a health commissioner in my county was a wonderful politician, an environmentalist, somebody who was was booted out of office by a combined effort by real estate speculators. He was on the water commission for my region in mm-hmm. California, and he was standing against the real estate speculators.
You don't want to do that in a place like California or Phoenix or even where I live here in Southwest Florida.
Yeah, so they did a coordinated attack campaign and got him booted out of office. Well, now he's my county supervisor, and he's been a really good guy. I live in a part of Contra Costa County which is urban and mostly poor. It's got the city of Richmond in it, which has at times been the murder capital of the state. So we're talking about poverty and drugs.
Yeah.
And a fairly substantial population, and it's very, very interesting to watch it. But what I'm seeing is that he's beginning to turn bad, you know? And I'm seeing it happen, and I think I'm seeing the reasons. and term limits is part of it, because you know, I mean, we want to get the bad guys out, but another question on my mind is how do we retain the good ones?
Well, we just have to sort them out. I mean, I've got some that I like, and I think that everybody likes, and we just have to sort them out. But the term limit, are you for term limits?
No,
you're not.
I'm not, and the reason is because I'm seeing the effect that it's having in my state, where it's visible. You know, so I mean, we have term limits. I'll give you some examples.
I'll say so. What you're saying is you've got some good politicians, and they have to go by the wayside because of term limits, and you don't like.
Yeah, well, more than that, they have to get involved in the game of musical chairs. And the way it works in California, Jerry Brown is a great example. You know, you remember he was governor.
Oh, sure.
And
used to date Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah. And he seemed to be very progressive. He made some wonderful appointments.
Isn't that awful? He was a big time politician, and I remember him for dating Linda Ronstadt.
Well, no, I mean it's worth. His lifestyle is, you know, comes
yeah,
up.
Yeah, a little bit of a bohemian fellow.
Well. You've got me confused. You know, this is one of these cases where we had this guy who I really liked, and then what has he turned into? Well, he was involved in the Democratic Party for a while. You know, I think he ran the campaign for Dianne Feinstein to become governor and lost, and she hated him, and he surfaced. He surfaced running to become the mayor of Oakland.
Right.
Okay? And he put on an incredible far left wing campaign. I mean, this guy was on Pacifica Radio 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, 10 hours a week, sounding like a radical.
Uh huh.
And then he gets into the office of Mayor of Oakland, and he turns into an absolute jerk for two terms.
Ah, but, a politician who's a chameleon. How unusual.
Well, you know, it's like we never expected this. Not from Jerry Brown, right. And he was, you know, it's like, okay, I don't live in Oakland. I used to. And it's one of these places that is like Richmond, which I'm outside of. It's very exciting. It's a city in a way that's so far down that it has nowhere to go but up. And so you can watch it and say, wow, you know, I'd like to be in on this ride. This is exciting. It's a real opportunity. You follow what I'm getting
sure,
at?
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's raw material here for good stuff. And before you know it, he's just turning everything into political garbage. And, doing charter schools and a military academy. He wants to put up an Indian casino, and I'm going, my God, you know, who is this man?
Yeah, yeah.
And his honcho is going around getting the women all upset because he's being now Jerry got termed out. So what does he do? He runs for attorney general. So now we have Jerry Brown as attorney general, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, what qualifications does this guy have?
Well, you don't have to after a while. Your name's known. You can run for anywhere from dog catcher to governor in California. I mean, what qualifications did the governator have to be governor?
Well, but you see what happens is these guys.
You guys are two-time losers out there. Ronald Reagan is governor, and the governator, both of them. Neither one of them had a new spit about what to do to run a state, but both of them got the honor to do it.
And by the way, Schwarzenegger has had the guy he defeated on his staff.
Oh, he
Ray
does.
Davis. Yeah, as an advisor.
Gray Davis is on his staff now. I didn't know that.
Well, he was last time I looked.
God, why would Gray Davis do that? But anyway, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, see what these people do if they want to keep on in a political career. They get termed out, so they run for a different office. And we find somebody running for an office that they're, you know, they're coming out of an office that they were really good in, and they're going into something that they have no qualification
for. It doesn't matter. They just keep on the staff. Listen, I had a high school guy. I went to a very small high school in Ohio, and a guy graduated a year ahead of me. He was a lawyer. He became a lawyer, and he got on the in the Ohio State House, and then he ran for the Ohio Senate, and he got in that, and then he ran for Attorney General, and then he ran for governor, and he's on the state Supreme Court now. But he's been there, done that, run for almost every office in Ohio. I mean, just a lot of them do that. Never had a paying job.
Yeah.
I mean, never had an actual job.
We've got bad ones. Like, we got, I'll go into a different level. You know, we had Pombo.
Yeah.
We're rid of Pombo, finally. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. And then we have a great congressman. We got George Miller.
Mm-hmm.
He's my congressman, and I want him there forever. I mean, the guy is, you know.
How many terms has he been in?
Oh, boy.
Quite a few. Well.
And the New York Times did this funny article about him. He runs a crash pad in Washington, in effect.
Oh.
Senator Schumer sleeps in his living room.
Ah.
And he rents out space to three other politicians.
Yeah, there's a couple of different cases of that guys doing that. Senator Bill Nelson here in Florida, he's involved with some weirdo group that, anyway, they rent a house and some religious group.
Yeah.
Some kind.
So here's the question is, how do we keep the good guys in? And, you know, and the other thing, too, of course, I mean, but the other can of worms is lobbyists.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you can. You know, it comes down to money. The lobbyists are running the show. In fact, I'm gonna play a little piece about lobbyists and the American dream and the money in politics and all that in just a little bit by George Carlin. And I do want to warn everybody, if you got your children in the room, to not let them listen to this, because you know George Carlin, right? And George is going to explain this quite succinctly.
Well, the thing was, here is a guy who I know his heart's in the right place, my county supervisor. And yet I looked at the endorsements that he made in the last campaign, and he endorsed some machine people. And it's like I said, why is he doing this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, they all owe each other. I mean, they do.
Or he's preparing to owe somebody.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking at. That he's going to get termed out, and he's a guy who I think somehow has it in his heart to do the people's business. Well. You know, if you've got that particular monkey on your back, you know, you want to be a good politician, then what do you do when you get termed out and you want to really stay in this thing because your heart's in it? I'm going to have a talk with him one day about this.
Yeah.
I don't know quite how I'm going to bring it up, but, I mean, I want to talk with him.
You won't get a straight answer.
Maybe I will.
You'll be lucky if you do.
I'm going to put it to him. I'm going to say, look, you know, are you doing this? I mean, did you endorse this particular candidate, mm-hmm. the school board, the one with all the slick PR? I mean, with PR that slick, money was coming from somewhere. Are you doing this because you're afraid for your career? I mean, I think I can put it to him.
Yeah, well, I hope you do. Hey, I got to run.
Okay,
interesting talking to you.
You too.
Call me back again, Richard.
Thank you.
Bye now. Speaking of lobbyists and who's actually running the country and all this and that, maybe some of you have heard this before, but I do want to warn you, this is kind of our plus rating. And it's from, fortunately, we're on internet radio and we can play this. We don't have to worry about the FCC. So if you're easily offended, don't listen to this because it is George Carlin. If you're not easily offended, I think you'll find it pretty good.
Is the reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy,
The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Pretty much the truth, isn't it? George gets a little raw with things, but you sort through all that. And you find that George Carlin is right on the money there. They don't care about you. Corporatism is here to stay. I don't know how we're going to stop it, and I don't want to get radical about it, but that piece couldn't be more true. It absolutely couldn't. And, wow. I you know, believe it or not, I've been a George Carlin fan for a long time, and this first time I ever heard that was earlier today. And I thought, well, I'll take a chance and play that and hope nobody gets offended by it, but... you sort through the blue part there, and without question, he's right. Right on the money. Right on the money. Let's go to the phone. We got Sarge in Mississippi. Hi, Sarge. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, guy. Yeah, Carlin, he's something else, ain't he?
Yeah. I went out to California one time to L.A. for the Rose Bowl. My Buckeyes were playing Southern Cal years ago, and I went in the downtown. It was in the downtown Hilton there, and I was sitting at one end of the bar, and I saw this guy sitting at the other, and I said, it looks like George Carlin. I went down there. Sure enough, it was him. And we sat there and had a couple of drinks together.
They cannot top that seven deadly words.
No.
That is his best.
That's right.
Hey, I appreciate you doing that interview with Billy Shears for Unreported News.
Oh, yeah, well, sure. It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
I'm tickled to death to have Billy with us. He's something else.
Yes, he is. He does.
Hey, you know, one thing we've got to do, if we want to get our country back, we've got to find a way to stop these lobbyists. We've got to make them accountable. If they're going to be writing bills and writing laws and stuff like that, then we need to put them under some kind of restrictions that we put the politicians under and hold them accountable, because there's no, if you're going to do the work of the politicians, then you should be subject to the same laws.
Well, you know, we've got these laws in Congress now that you can't go with a certain lobbying firm, you know, for the rest of, you know, when you get out, you get out of Congress, you can't do this and that, but they violate that all the time. If they don't go with the lobbying firm, they send their wife or brother-in-law. I mean, it's outrageous.
But, you know, Trent Lott wasn't going to run this time. He had it in his mind that he was going to join a lobbying firm and not run, but when he got that press about his racial slurs and stuff,
mm-hmm.
He lost it.
Yeah.
And so that's why he turned up running again. It had nothing to do with anything he really cared about. He just lost the job he had. I don't know whether it was Haley Barber's lobbying firm or not, but...
Haley Barber. That name keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Well, that's a man I have more contempt for him than anybody besides John McCain or George Bush.
I got to tell you, when he said he was running for, and that's how much I know about Southern politics in Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama, when they said he was running for governor down there, I thought, nah. There's no way Haley Barber would get elected governor of Mississippi.
Well, I tell you what he did. He pulled one of the classic right-wing BS jobs you'll ever see in your life. He ran his commercial. It had a bucket there, and the bucket had holes in it, and the water was being poured in the bucket, and it was just running out the holes, and he was blaming Ronnie Musgrove for all the losses of manufacturing jobs in Mississippi. He did not mention a thing that it was George Bush that was outsourcing the damn jobs.
Hmm.
And he just played up. Haley Barber is a liar. He tells half-truths. He twists stuff. And he still wants to insist on torque reform, even though his boy, Trent Lott, is suing his own insurance company.
Yeah. Who's that other guy down there, that Republican lawmaker that's been raising canes trying to get at State Farm? His own house. He got screwed. His own house is down, and he's trying to get at him. Can't think of his name.
Let's see, it couldn't be Cochran. He comes from another part of the state.
Can't think of his name. Yeah, he got his house wiped out, and he's out.
Of course, now, Gene Taylor lives down on the coast. But he's a Democrat. I don't know if it's him or not.
I can't remember who it is, the name. I know his name, his face if I see it. But, did Lott ever get his house rebuilt, I wonder?
He's still in the courts.
Oh, okay. I would have thought he'd had enough money to go ahead and rebuild it. And you know.
I tell you who can keep you updated on that is Jim Yancey.
Uh-huh.
Jim lives in Pascagoula, and he works. You know, he's a Jackson County Community Services Coalition director, and he's doing all this work to rebuild stuff. And of course, he actually does his job, so he's not getting the fines he needs. But you know.
Well, speaking of that area and Katrina and all, I wonder how the folks over at New Orleans feel. I wonder how Ray Nagin and Mary Landrieu feel right now that Bush has taken $1.3 billion away from the levy funding over there in New Orleans. They can't be really happy about that.
Well, you know, I've got a good friend that is on the Malloy show every once in a while. His name is George Loki Williams, and he lives in New Orleans, and he's been writing on it. In fact, he wrote the blog that got the word out of what was going on in New Orleans before the press decided to give it attention.
Hmm.
And I don't know, but I'm going to ask him, and I'll get back with you on it.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people a little bit surprised about that. I'm not.
You can go to his website. It's humidcity.com, and I'm sure Loki has something on it.
Okay.
But, it's ridiculous. Greg Palast, and if Palast says something, he backs it up.
Yep.
And one thing he said is that there's an LSU professor who has figured out a way to hurricane-proof the entire Gulf Coast region for the cost of 1 month of the stupid Iraq.
Really?
Yes, 1 month. It would cover Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, the whole blooming area for one stupid month of this illegal occupation, and yet this half-wit, no, I'm sorry, this dim-wit in Washington, this dim-wit in Jackson, Mississippi, they won't even pay attention. Mm. I mean, it's sick, man. I just, and that's why we've got to get our country back somehow, some way. I don't know how, but we've got to get the money out of politics in some way. I don't, you know, it goes back to what you were talking about.
Well, it took a long time to get it in there. I guess it's going to be a long time to get it out. Well, probably didn't take all that long to get it in.
Well, guy, I'm going to let you go.
All right,
I'm
Sarge.
Not in the best of health, so I'm going to let you get it out.
All right, thank good to talk out. To you, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Yes. Going to take money away from the levy fund in New Orleans. Want to keep those tax cuts permanent, though. Going to take money away from Medicare and Medicaid. But going to keep those tax cuts, though. We're going to cut this and we're going to cut that. We're going to cut 141 different programs in order to balance the budget, in order to pay for the war. But we're going to keep those tax cuts, though. We're not going to let go of those tax cuts come hell or high water. Because those are the people that keep us in office. Those are the people that we turn to when we need a bunch of money in the coffers to run for political office. And we sure as hell aren't going to offend them. So the tax cuts will stay. You middle class guys, don't be silly. Don't be silly. It's disgusting. I'm surprised. Surprised at myself. Coming up on... Well, we're about, what, a little over four years doing this program now. And to talk about this filth that is politics almost every single day is, sometimes it just makes you feeling dirty. It really does. Sometimes it does. And we've got all these loudmouth right-wingers that, without a question, the Democrats are afraid of. Can you think of any other reason why the Democrats wouldn't get together and defund this war? Can you? Really, there isn't any other reason. And you get your Limbaughs and your Hannitys and your Melanie Morgans and all these people. They all know everything. They all were dead wrong on this war from start to where we are now. Totally dead wrong. Let me play you a little clip here I happen to run across. You know that Melanie Morgan, that loudmouth bitch that speaks out of the side of her mouth? She's on Hannity's show now and then. And she may be just as bad as Ann Coulter. This is her talking and bragging in 05, okay? In 05, June of 05, about how well everything was doing in Iraq.
We have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not a psychic. I can't read the future. But what I can tell you is that when I talked to the Iraqi general in charge of training troops over there, he was telling us some very good news. They're a 60% troop strength now in terms of where they are trying to attain a goal of 100% readiness. They're at 60%. They're making progress every day.
Yeah, they're making progress every day. This was back in June of 05. And Melanie Morgan, I was there. Another one of these ones that flies over there and stays in the green zone for a couple of days and come back home and knows it all. Doesn't have any idea. I've talked to people who are stationed in Iraq. We get letters from them. We get emails from them. Say these people that come over there and stay in the green zone for a couple of days have no idea whatsoever what's going on outside of those walls. But there you go. Just like Bill Kristol, Melanie Morgan, been wrong from day one. Limbaugh's been wrong from day one. Hannity's been wrong from day one. And still. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, I guess not. If that was you, call back. I think somebody is calling back here. Lights are lighting up everywhere. All right, let's give this a try. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi.
Hello.
Are you live?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, happy to hear you, Guy. This is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
All right, still I'm with a group, about 15 of us, every Monday morning. We drop in to our congressman's field office here in Eureka. and wanting very much to try to induce several congressmen to do what has to be done and hold the White House accountable for their behaviors, meaning impeach, meaning investigate. And he sounds like he's with us. He verbalizes these things, but reality, he's considered a big fundraiser, meaning big corporate special interests put big money in his pockets. And among them is Lockheed Martin. They're doing very well in this war.
Oh, yeah.
They'd like not to see it come to an end, and he'd like not to offend their interests. But he likes to say that we're all happily together. Those of us who are here demonstrating are demonstrating for what he wants to see happen. But, it's politicians giving words, but when it would come to a vote or a resolution, it ain't going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. He doesn't, more than likely, he doesn't represent you. He represents Lockheed. I mean, you got Lockheed throwing money into somebody's coffers, election coffers, during a war. Man, how much better could Lockheed have it?
Yeah, well, and of course they've got far more money to put in this than any of us would ever have.
Yep, that's right.
They can charge the government whatever the heck they want for whatever little they do.
Can and do.
Get their no-bid contracts. These guys are criminals that are just robbing the people. They're robbing this country blind. They have insatiable greed, and that's what's driving this whole thing, as I connect it. So,
well, greed is the name of the game. That's what the war is about. That's all it was ever about. It was never about any do-the-right-thing ideology. It's about money, and that's it, period.
And it is, and the greed is insatiable. They will never be satisfied.
No.
They think, well, maybe the next billion will make us feel fulfilled. No.
The more money, the more power. The more power they have, the better off they are. And I was going to talk about that today, but I think I'm going to wait until tomorrow and talk about how they see themselves as the royalty, and we're the serfs. And make no mistake about it, that is the way they see it.
Well, I think those of us even that are running right on flat-out poverty wouldn't trade a day of our life to be one of them, with all their billions of dollars and all their mansions and jumbo jets and all.
I agree with you on that.
I wouldn't be one of them, And no, you wouldn't either. I don't think any of the people that you have, the callers that are running right on fumes, would not trade places with one of them.
Not a chance.
No. Well, anyway, we've talked for a long time. I've been with you since you just about started on the radio and this program, anyway. And
yeah, that's right. We were the internet program here. Of course, we've been streaming the program for coming up on 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Head On Radio Network and starting up this time around was on March something last year. I think March 20th. I'm not sure. So thanks for being with us, Dave.
I value so much what you do, Guy, and I'll stay with you as long as you can do it.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. Hey, we got a letter this week. I was going to look around and see if we could find the orchestra. I don't know if they're around here today or not. Let's see if they are. They're awfully quiet if they are. We get letters once in a while. Emails, and we haven't gotten all that many from right-wingers lately, but I did get one, and I thought you'd want to hear about it. So I'm going to give you a few minutes of Republican love here, if you don't mind. I should have built this up and done all that kind of stuff, but no. This is a letter from one of our right-wing friends. It says, I've listened to two of your so-called shows now, and I've never heard anything so disgusting in my entire life. For two solid hours, you attack the president and anyone associated with him. I find this to be the most objectionable radio I have ever heard. Objectionable? Don't you wonder why you aren't on more stations like Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity? The answer is very simple. They don't waste their listeners' time by bashing the other side constantly. Really? Sure, they make a comment. This is really cute right here. Sure, they make a comment now and then that pertains to the Democrats, but basically their shows are informative and unbiased. Yeah. They may seem biased to you because you libs can't stand to hear the truth. You say you don't lie? Well, That is easy to disprove because every time you call Rush Limbaugh a liar, you are the one lying. I challenge you to give even one example of a lie by Rush Limbaugh. And for that reason, I know you won't read this letter on the air because you don't dare. Well, sir, let me start by saying that I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the very day that he and B1 Bob Dornan from California took to the air together, a team effort on Limbaugh's show, and claimed that they had indisputable evidence that Vince Foster was murdered in an apartment owned by Hillary Clinton and his body was dumped in the park. He went on and on about it and never apologized for making such an outrageous claim on the air. Limbaugh is a very good liar. I didn't say he was a bad liar. I say he is a good liar and a very prolific liar. And if you'll notice, quite often, he'll get a phony phone call on Monday. I'm getting good at it. I can pick him out on Mondays. Or early in the week. And the caller will spew some right-wing BS. And Rush will say, well, you might have a point there. And then on Tuesday, Rush will say, well, we heard yesterday that this happened or that happened. And by Wednesday, Rush will be saying, we know this to be true. He builds a straw man, and he adds more straw every single day until his idiotic audience sucks it up like manna from heaven. One example of a Rush Limbaugh lie, I could give you dozens, but you wouldn't hear him. Because idiots like you see Rush as a god. He's your guru of conservatism. You listen to his words as if he can do no wrong. You listen to the words coming from the mouth of a hopeless drug junkie. The kind of guy who's a junkie but doesn't even have the guts to go out and buy his own drugs. He has his maid do it for him. This is the type of man people like you adore. Where did I put the rest of this letter for him? Well, anyway, I can't find the rest of his letter. I don't want to. that's good for you. You know, and now people like this person are being surrounded by the truth. In my opinion, the terrible, ugly truth that Limbaugh and the people he helped put in office, they've lied to you from day one. They've told you one thing and done another for years. And people like this, his name is Herb, they can't even accept the truth. Because they're so conditioned to sucking up to Bush and Limbaugh's lies like they were words from God. Talent on loan from God, says Limbaugh. For my money, a more despicable character has never lived on American soil. He's a big cog, maybe the biggest cog in the conservative wheel. And he helped get Bush elected, who in turn sent over 3,000 of our military personnel to their deaths for nothing more than greed. Money. That's the god of people like Rush Limbaugh and George Bush. Money is what this war is and always was about. And people like Herb here are too damn stupid to figure it out. Even though the truth's coming out in the news every single day now. I really don't have any hope that cretins like Herb here will wake up one day and finally accept the awful truth. That the United States of America has been hijacked by a bunch of money-grubbing evil bastards, and Rush Limbaugh is responsible for that. He is as responsible for it as anybody else I can think of. Without him, Bush would never have been able to steal the presidency. Without Limbaugh, none of this would be possible. And he wears it as a badge of honor. I don't see it as anything but terrible shame and wickedness. Me? Lie about Limbaugh? Funniest thing I've heard in a long time. Nobody has to lie about Rush Limbaugh. Oh, he's good. He's good at what he does, all right. There's no question about that. Very, very good at what he does. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in a moment or two. Don't go anywhere.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. I traveled to the nation of New York this week on a goodwill diplomatic mission. As we all know, terror struck that city-state over 5 years ago, destroying the famed double towers that marked that proud nation's shores. The resilience of the peoples of New York has always been an inspiration to us all. The double towers have gone from a giant pile of rubble that I once stood on to a proudly standing chain-link fence with pictures of the pile of rubble around it. And they have plans for a new building or buildings scheduled to be completed sometime early in the next century. Like the Egyptians of lore, they plan to move giant house-sized boulders all the way from the famed rock piles of New Jersey to build the soaring sky buildings anew, using Hebrew slaves brought into New York over the years. It should be quite a sight to see when it is complete. Though we will all be long dead. Well, I won't be, because my body is going to be what they call cryogenetically frozen, and I'm going to be held in storage until a time of future danger, when the Constitution is amended to allow me another term in office to come back and help. Thank you.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may say is in the pill you took today. In the year 4545, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 5555, your arms are hanging limp at your sides. Your legs got nothing to do, some machine doing that for you. In the year 6565, ain't gonna need no husband, won't need no wife. You pick your son, pick your daughter too, from the bottom of a long life tube. Whoa, twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday. In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 35,
oh yeah, back for the last, 10 3/4 minutes of the program here on the Guy James Show, part of the Head On Radio Network. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Brought the official Guy James Show puppies to the program today. Yes, we did. And they're in the studio right now. Kukla the Wonder Dog. She's the older of the two Yorkies. Beautiful, beautiful animal. Absolutely gorgeous and so loving. So nice. And Sophie, her little, well, they're no relation, but Sophie's a female also, and Sophie's, I don't know, what is she, about 6 months old now? Kukla's a little bit past 1 year. That means doll in Greek, by the way. Kukla. My wife is Greek, so that's where that name came from. And Sophie, I don't know. She just looks like a Sophie. And she's the ornery one. She's the one that runs around the house, and when we bring her over to the studio, always mischievous. But it is fun having two of them together. They play and romp and have such a good time together. If you'd have told me a while back that I'd have a little dog in the house or even in the studio, I would never have believed it. But not that I don't like dogs, because I'm an animal lover. I'm a farm boy, and we always had dogs on the family. But dogs on the family, I sound like George Bush now. Always had dogs in the family around the farm. But these little puppies are quite different, quite lovable. And anyway, we love them a lot. It's 10 minutes before the hour, 5 o'clock. We got John Fox, I think, is coming up after our show today. Our schedule's been a little bit altered because of the death of Bob Kincaid's father. And I think we'll be back to normal next week. Haven't heard from anybody this week about it, but I think we will anyway. That was good news to hear. Did you hear that during the news about Kodak's getting into the printer business and going to sell discount ink? Man, isn't that something? I mean, I've got, three high-speed printers all together in my offices and all. They should give you the printer. This one here is an Epson C88, and it's a great printer, but God, when you go buy ink for them, I hope Kodak can do something about that. Let's go to phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Jim in California. How you doing today?
Hi, Jim.
I just wanted to tell you how much I agreed with what you were saying earlier in the show about how disappointing the Democrats have been so far. You know, I mean, I was like everybody. I was very happy in November, you know, when we finally got the majority back and everything like that. But as much as I can't stand to even look at George Bush, I tried to watch a little bit of the State of the Union, and then you could see Pelosi right behind him. And when she gave him a standing ovation, I just turned it off. I mean, I almost jumped through the roof, and I mean, that man couldn't do anything I'd give him a standing ovation for, the way I look at it. I mean, after all he's done in the past, if he said he was going to give $1 million to every American, I still wouldn't give him a standing ovation. I mean, it's just, I just feel very disappointed in the Democratic Party for a lot of reasons. But to me, that was the capstone right there when she stood up and applauded that jerk.
Well, I like to think that she was applauding for the office and not for the jerk. But man, oh man, I don't expect anybody to walk up and hit him in the mouth or anything. But I'm to the point like you where nothing that he says means it. There's no truth in anything he said. I cannot accept. If he told me the sun was coming up in the morning, I wouldn't believe him.
No, in fact, if he said it, it probably wouldn't.
There's no truth to anything he says. We're starting to find out now, and thank God for the Scooter Libby trial. We're finding out about some of the filth and corruption inside this administration. You can't believe, nor could you ever believe, a damn thing they ever said.
Nope, not a word. I didn't think he could get any worse than Pappy Bush, you know. I was so relieved that we got a brief respite under Clinton for a few years. Although he, you could say many bad things about him too, but at least he was a lot better than what we'd had for the 12 years before that.
Well, I remember when Nixon quit. My father said to me, and I'll always remember these words. My father said to me, well, at least we got that over with. And I said, got what over with? And he said, we'll never have another president like Richard Nixon, and there has to be a rotten apple in every barrel, and he's ours. Well, here we've got one far more rotten than Richard Nixon.
Oh, far more. In fact, I think every Republican since Nixon has been worse myself. It's just been progressively worse with each one. It scares me who might be next, you know?
Yeah, you know, I'm inclined to agree with you. We look at old Tricky Dick as, covering up that little scandal there and everything. When it comes down to it, the Watergate break-in, that wasn't, big deal.
No, compared to Iran-Contra, that was nothing.
No, and that, you're that, right.
And that scandal has still never gotten its just due day of people understanding what was really going on there.
Never will. When old Cappy Weinberger got the pardon and all that, why, that was pretty much the end of it. And, of course, he's dead, and and we're never going to hear the truth of it.
Yeah, and I still see Jeb sitting out in the wings there. Maybe I'm an eternal pessimist, but I don't think we've seen the last of this family. And
I'm inclined to agree with you. I think he knows the climate's not right for him right now, but that next time around, he might be right there.
Yeah. Anyway, Guy, continue to enjoy your show and hang in there. And, thanks for letting me vent a little bit.
All right. Well, hey, I do it every day. No reason why you shouldn't. Thank you.
Okay, Guy. Bye-bye.
Old Jeb is waiting in the wings. You think he's not? Everybody think that just because his brother is a washed-up, no-good liar of a president that Jebby won't be giving it a shot? Hey. This is the aristocracy we're talking about, and this is the aristocracy I want to talk about tomorrow on the program. That's going to be what we're going to lead the program off on tomorrow, talking about the aristocracy. We are going to have a good interview tomorrow. We're going to have Marjorie Cohen. We've had Marjorie on the program before. She's a professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. And she has done a couple of pieces lately. You can find her at counterpunch.org. So do your homework, counterpunch.org, Cohen. And she's going to talk to us about how Georgie Boy, George the Liar, is gradually, slowly but surely leading us on a course to war with Iran. Make no mistake about it. We are headed there. It is something that George Bush wants to do. It is something that Dick Cheney wants to do. And they've got their new Secretary of Defense wanting to do it with them. You wait. They will do it. You can see all the parallels between the rhetoric now and the rhetoric before the Iraq War. We can see all the charges and accusations against the Iranians, same ones that were leveled at Saddam Hussein before. The fact that we caught them in these huge lies about Saddam Hussein, the fact that the whole thing was built on nothing but lies, that hasn't deterred these people at all. They see themselves as having the power. They see themselves as the ruling class over us. And this Bush administration, like no administration in history, is looking at this as though we are the leaders and you people, we don't give a damn what you have to say about anything. We've got a course that we're going to follow. We owe people. We owe the military-industrial complex. We owe the PNAC people. We will go into Iran, and you won't have any say in it. That is what's happening right now. And if the Democrats are smart, they'll start heading that off right now. They'll start working on it right now. They better be ready because it's coming, baby. And anyway, Marjorie Cohen's going to be on tomorrow. We're going to talk about that. And again, I want to talk to you about this aristocracy that's trying to be built here in America, is being built here in America, to where the rest of us are just the serfs and they're the ruling class. And they're going to give us enough to eat, and they're going to make sure we have some toys, that we'll have a TV set and a car, and maybe a little computer or something. They'll make sure that we're able to be satisfied with our basic needs, and maybe just a little bit more, but not too much, because that makes us kind of uppity, you know. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. I've been preaching about it for some time now, as you well know. Don't think that these people don't think that we're just scum, and they're entitled to the wealth of this nation, and they're entitled. So be ready to hear that tomorrow on the Guy James Show. Hey, I do want to remind you, all of you, that this is a listener-supported program, and we are in need of some support right now. I hate to just come out and say it that way, but we could use your help. It costs money to do this, and we don't do it for any pay, as we've explained to you for 4 years now, over 4 years. We have gotten no pay. In fact, it's cost us a lot of money to do the show out of our pockets. So if you can, go to the guyjameshow.com, throw in a couple nickels, and we would appreciate it very much. Do remember, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Oh, have you ever? Now all that's left is the truth. Talk to you tomorrow, gang, and thanks for listening.